This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of East Meets West here on the Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retreat podcasting network. I am one of your hosts, Scott McLeod, and I am joined, as always, by not only my partner in crime, my support system through watching House of Torture matches, but my partner in the upcoming season of the ESSR Fantasy Draft, the tag team season running into WrestleMania 40, or if you're going by WrestleMania, by like Roman numerals, WrestleMania XL, the largest WrestleMania so far. He is Grant McGrovey. Hello, Grant.
It is a great time to be back, and yes, tag partners, just two guys, and some dice.
And some dice, yes. As I know, if you didn't tune into our selection show, I think it's still on our YouTube channel. You can go check that out, and the breakdown of everybody's teams is on our podcast feed in the back catalogue, wherever you get your podcast, Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcast from. You can catch Sidedraft Live, East Meets West, feature shows, and ESSR Central. Thank you for the day with updates about the draft. We posted the results of our last draft, which was won by yours truly, on our social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Suplex Retweet. And so I won the last season running into the Royal Rumble. I jumped on the Quidditch's bandwagon before that massive rock-sized obstacle was put in his way. And I used him for all he's worth, got my points, got my fourth victory. Jumped, and then we got the draft. I had to pick from last, and like my name came up first and everything in the selection, which was funny, even though it was going to be because of if I can fail last. And of all the people to get, I get my East Meets West co-host as my partner. We'd even talked about it. We'd had this name too, just two guys, sort of multiple seasons ago. I don't even know how long ago was. We joked about it. If we ever got paired together in a draft, that's what we'd have our name be.
Just two guys. But this time we have some dice with us for the ride.
Oh yes. The dice is our Takemichi Chinoku and the whole thing. And I'm looking forward to, you know, not to break it down too much, you know, we are recording this on a Tuesday, and on Monday just gone is when the scoring started. We are doing okay, we're in the middle of the table, but we've had like one day of scoring so far, so don't I get too ahead of ourselves. But we'll some of the guys on STL did call us dark horses to win, and you know, I think we should be a bit more than dark horses. I mean, I've won two of the last three seasons when certain things on paper said I shouldn't have, and you've gone much farther than people would have thought by relying on dice.
That's it. Who'd have thought that you could put your fate into inanimate objects and come out so strongly? And if it goes wrong, we already have the excuse. It's an inanimate fucking object.
You're an inanimate fucking object. Do tune into the selection show if you've missed it. It's on, like I said, on the YouTube channel. And you listen to Dave forget the basics of recognizing faces and understanding gifts when it comes to picking teams and taking suggestions. when it comes to me sending him a gift of a clean Ouija stick for 2.0 somehow.
Honest to God, like how the fuck does someone even make such? This is my problem with the Smart Saturday Draft Live guys. It's just bumbling incompetence.
Yes. And every time you think they can't get any worse, he goes and does something like that, especially Dave. You know, I'd expect it from Ryder, at least, but not from Dave. he almost caused a cancerable incident as Dave on that show. But I'm happy with getting the acclaim and everything. Dave also when he said that we were lying because we only picked half and he's in half regular, even though we went into our group chat and told everyone that's what we were doing.
We never had anything. It was all there, laid out from the get-go. Mind games.
Strategy is an open book. You can't prepare for it. And you'll know why you were defeated. But yeah, this is not SDL, but you know, I'm sure we could do a much better job than the so-called experts on Saturday Draft Live every week. But we are here to talk about, you know, a wrestling that they refused to count in the draft. You know, the good stuff over in Japan. And like we were just discussing, Grant, you know, we had the big highs of Wrestle Kingdom and you're settling into the new beginning and new fresh feeds, and we got some stuff in the US to talk about, but so much has just happened in the wider wrestling world that a lot of this feels like forever ago. Like you could tell me this happened 3 months ago and I'd believe you.
So who'd have thought? Not me.
Not me. I know. Same night is bloody hard to kill with this show, which is why Ospreay and Okada were booked for the TNA tapings after Hardicle, but couldn't make the show itself because they had a Battle in the Valley to headline. But that is where we're going to start, which is Battle in the Valley in San Jose, California, on January 13th. Solid show by, you know, New Japan Strong Standards, I thought. First major incident was in the opening match where we had Team Filthy of Tom Waller, Royce Isaacs, and Jarrell Nelson losing to the team of Jacob Fatu, Fred Rosser, and Shota Umino. And, you know, we're still playing at the tension between Team Filthy and he's in something between Rosser and Lawler. Like maybe they'll be reluctant allies at some point because it looks like Team Filthy maybe get ready to kick their leader out of the group. But afterwards, the thing everyone wants to talk about is out of nowhere, somebody attacked Julia Umino from out of the crowd, and if we weren't happy about that outcome, that person's only got one thing to say to you: cry me a river.
That's it. Cries a river. Do we give a shit? No, we do not.
No, because it's fucking Jack Perry, the master of real glass, the man who single-handedly got CM Punk fired. You know, he could do more damage to CM Punk than Tony Khan or the Elite ever could just by talking to the camera and using real glass. And I remember hearing about all this, like, and being in Wembley when the news of the fight broke out, like somebody passed, like Tom or whoever was sat next to me, he passed the phone on to me soon, the report that there was a fight backstage. I went, oh God, what is that now? Because also we were so far, we didn't know that he'd been talking to the camera about the real glass, but fucking hell, we were way high up in Wembley. We could fucking hear it from where we were when that incident happened.
And ever since then, Tony Khan has always feared for his life in the workplace.
Yes. And then went on the World's End press conference and said, this is the safest place to work in wrestling. Like, 4 months ago, you said you were fearing for your life. So you're sending us mixed messages there, Tony. But yeah, I'd forgotten all about Jack Perry. And I thought it was always bizarre. Like, he pretty much instigated that he knew Punk would react. He wanted to get a rise out of him, which is why he did the comments in the camera that he did. He could have just done the spot and maybe Punk wouldn't have heard that it was real glass, maybe the issue would have passed. But you know, why he wasn't officially fired, there wasn't anything coming about him getting fired, is beyond me. Because then he comes out and he's got a scapegoat armband, he's ripping up his AEW contract after he's attacked Shota Umino, and you know, it's just weird because like everyone's like, oh, is this legit or is it not? Because some people are willing to very much believe that he's actually gone for AEW, some people are very skeptical to believe anything about it.
Yeah, the whole coming out, ripping up the contract, giving it the, everyone knows who I am. It's like, who are you again?
Yeah, you were standing in a very dimly lit section of the crowd, and I think it was Walker Stewart on one of the Road 2 shows talked about the incident as Showtime was making his way to the ring. I think he said, Bushy must be furious. People keep trying to attack people wearing Bushy's masks.
That's it. It's always a Bushy mask. It's like, like, why? Why Bushy in particular? Why is it never an El Desperado mask or a Jushin Thunder Liger mask?
All I know is, like, does Bushy get a cut of every time someone buys a mask in order to attack someone? So I don't think he's bothered. Like, hell, if Bushy came out to attack somebody after a match, like the actual Bushy, I don't think anyone would believe it for him because they'd all be sitting there waiting for him to unmask, not thinking, like, that's not the real Bushy.
That's not him. Look at the size of him.
Waiting for him to unmask like the villain at the end of a bloody Scooby-Doo episode. It's weird. So yeah, and what's weird about that is like Shota's went back to Japan to finish up his stuff with Ren Narita and he's continuing stuff with the House of Torture. So I'm assuming this is one of those storylines that New Japan's been doing that kind of just keeps going from US show to US show. So the fact that nothing's came of it since and Jack Perry's been silent, nobody's had any reports or anything to say that he is signed with New Japan or he has left, like Tony Khan's not said anything about his status with the company. It just feels like weird, like almost feels like a fear dream. Like, did that actually happen or did I imagine it?
Did I imagine it? Is it real? I can't remember. It must have happened because he's here now.
Also, the thing with bloody Fred Rosser and like the stuff with Team Filthy, it feels weird that Strong has its own storylines. Is there right now it doesn't even do weekly shows anymore? It's like month to month. And so you just be reminded, oh yeah, that happened last time. And then I saw a thing on Twitter, because I don't watch Ring of Honor, I don't think many other people do, but randomly Fred Rosser and Tom Lawler teamed up on an episode of Ring of Honor in a proving career match against the Kingdom. We went, ah, okay.
It's like, whatever floats your boat, lads.
Yeah. You do you, Ring of Honor. I'm probably still not going to watch.
Back to the real wrestling.
back to real wrestling. But I enjoyed Battle of the Valley for a while. Also, we had that opening six-man tag. We had action with the CMLL crossover as well. Masquerade Dorada and Volador Jr. defeating Rocky Romero and Soberano Jr. We had TJP stepping up and a non-title match against global champion David Finlay. We had what I described as... We had DOD fighting to defend the Strong Tales against the oddball mismatch of the two War Dog teams with Alex Colvin and Clark Connors teaming together against the champions. We had Julia retaining her title and I believe it was her eighth defense against Bishadora. Jeff Cobb was revealed as a mystery partner for Matt Riddle against TMDK. Eddie Kingston and Gabriel Kidd went to a no contest. We had a bloody no DQ match in the same event with Moxley and Shingo. And we had also the Okada and Ospreay bring the house down in the main event. Do you have much to say about Battle of Valley? Were there any highlights when you were watching it?
I would like to say that I personally hope that Julia's next defence comes against Trish Adora's sister, Wiz Adora. Just so we can bring back the theme tune as a chant. Other matches on it. Eddie Kingston and Gabriel Kidd going to the double countout. I'm normally not a fan of double countout finishes. This was fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
The actual animosity between the two of them was incredible.
Eddie would have beat the count, but he went and rolled back in and you were kicking on the mile. Oh, you God, he starts calling them fat and everything. And he's enraged King so much, he couldn't even just roll in and roll back out just to break the count off so he could have 20 more seconds of beating him and the match would have still went. No, he just went, I have to beat him up now. And like the post-match promos from both of them, like, Keeper Kid's all bloody, cutting in the camera, and like he's got blood, some of his blood's on the title belt, and Eddie Kingston's in the promo, like, I'm not going to wash this off, I'm going to keep this here as a reminder. Basically, building up a rematch. I wouldn't be surprised if they hold off on that till maybe Windy City Riot, keep that going through, you know, the strong shows. But the hell of a. Again, I don't think Walker Stewart, as much as he tried, I don't think he could understand what the fucking Triple Crown is. Because I think he said all three belts are being defended. I think it was billed as a Continental Classic Crown or whatever defense, even though Gabe only wanted one of the three belts involved in it. But a hell of a showing for Gabe as a singles guy, because you know, the War Dogs are seemingly in their own little teams in as a unit, but it's nice when one of them gets this like single spotlight.
Yeah, absolutely. And then what better way to follow that than going on to a no DQ match with Moxley and Shingo? Mm-hmm. Let's face it, we knew that was going to be an absolute banger of a match. There was never a question about how good that was going to be.
Oh yeah, I mean, also the history between the two, and as they mentioned on commentary, you know, Dragon Gate and everything like that. I like, usually a no DQ, there's a certain level of violence you don't expect it to escalate, like a no holds bar or a deathmatch style, but it's also got John Moxley, so it's not a case of there's levels, like, this is not to be the same level of violence that you're always going to expect. It's very bloody on both ends, so it's very rare to see Shingo bleed from, like, I've seen him in New Japan. There's bloody multiple table spots, and this, everybody skewers getting brought out. I think it was evident that Moxley was always going to get the win. Moxley very rarely loses when he shows up. And even when he lost in that six-man title, he wasn't taking the fall, and then he didn't take the fall in the triple threat match at Wrestle Kingdom. But I'm very interested to see where he goes next, because then he got on the mic and said there's one more mountain for him to climb in New Japan, and he called it Tetsuya Naito for a match which has been confirmed for Windy City Riot.
That's it. They've been very clever not to say it's for the title yet either, mm-hmm. because it's all dependent on Naito still having the title at that point.
Yeah, definitely, because he has to fight Sanada and Sapporo in a favourite. And usually, given where the April show is, if they're going to do Sakura Genesis, because sometimes they switch it up, because I remember a couple of years ago it was Hyper Battle or whatever they called it. That's usually right at the start of April, so the chance, because when they say Riot is on the 12th of April, so the chance that the big April show with the New Japan Cup winner gets his title shot is going to be before that. So Aito could have two upcoming title defenses, maybe three if he wants to do something for the anniversary show before then. But I think just the idea of the match itself is really drawing a lot of AEW and New Japan fans in. I think if there are any tickets left in the last week or so, if they announce it as a title match, that might convince a few more people to go.
Yeah, I think it would be let's face it, New Japan's pretty much confirmed the weekly strong stuff is done. It's all about the big shows. So really, when they're going to America, they need to put on a card that justifies these shows. You can't half-arse it. They always need to have something big. In this case, it was Ospreay and Okada being the big kind of main thing for like both guys winding up with New Japan and the big feel there. But otherwise, you need to have one of the big titles on the line.
Yeah, I think that... having that match in the main event, you said having Moxley in case, you know, that AEW crossover, right, loading up it with title matches, with the strong belts being on the line, and for some extent, the CML crossover, because I think in California, you know, Lucha Libre is very, very big in that area. So that's a big thing. Announcing Mustafa Ali through a video promo at the show as well, and his match, which has been announced for Windy City Riot and his hometown of Chicago against Hiromu, which will be a hell of a match, I'd imagine, because he'll be the hometown guy. Everybody loves Hiromu, but he might have stuff at least getting about, because he's already also announced for No Surrender for TNA later this month against Chris Sabin as well.
Yeah, and he's confirmed for shows in the UK as well, up and coming. So, like, Mustafa Ali is not wasting any time. He is hitting the ground running and making a case for this is what WWE missed out on.
Yeah, definitely. Although I was talking about this the other day, I can't remember who I was talking about, but it was amazing how he went through months of wanting to be let go, and they put him in stuff that was probably so shit they probably wish they would let him go. Then he gets something with Dom and NXT that he actually could sink his teeth into, and then I'm like, oh, you want to go, do you? All right, we'll let you go now. It was just a weird the way they handled him in that sense. And I remember being a bit scared when I heard about the Winterest Arena being where they were doing Windy City Riot, and you know, how they could sell it, because I don't know if they're going to do it for the... It can hold around 10,000 for most of its events. I didn't know if that's how many people they're going to set it up for. But apparently the ticket sales have been going very well. Like, they sold out the initial tickets they put on sale. And Chris Johnson said they were opening up. And the next week, they're opening up the upper levels as well to add additional tickets in, because also the initial wave went very quickly, because they've announced, like you said, those two matches. There will be some other announcements probably coming soon. They've announced Suzuki and Nick Nemeth to be on the shows as well, so they're trying to also appeal to some more casual wrestling fans who maybe aren't watching New Japan Weekly, but you know, they know the importance, and when they go to America, of, like you said, bringing people in for the bigger shows.
Yeah, that's it. They're going all out for it. They're going all out with it. They know they need to, because me and you had the big discussion before Wrestle Kingdom there, New Japan was in a very stagnant state for a good couple of months. they can't afford that now. Everything's heating up all over. So if they want to stand out, they're going to have to do something big because, well, Okada, Ospreay, they're gone.
Yeah. Yeah, so like when your biggest star just overall in Okada and your biggest Western star in Ospreay, that was like the two having the kind of their final swan song in the main event of that show, which I think was quite fitting. Whenever I'm thinking about what to say about this Okada Ospreay match, like I couldn't think of much else to say. You know, I mean, what other ways can you find to say that Ospreay versus Okada was a great match? Like after that, we haven't said multiple times already in the course of this show, but I was just more surprised at the finish because they already said it was like 7-2 in favour of Okada. But despite the fact Okada is on his way out, he's like, I'm a fuck going out of my bag though. Ospreay, you've got that cushy AEW deal. You've got that cushy AEW deal coming your way. You couldn't be hurt with a loss. So Okada went over again.
And I'm going to say it now. I fucking hated that. Okay.
I thought you would.
Absolutely. I was fucking livid. I was like, of course Okada can't fucking put anyone else over on the way out. Man thinks he's fucking Japanese John Cena.
Well, he pretty much is. Okada wins, lol, you know. And you know, I don't think that's not even the most egregious match he didn't lose this month, in my opinion. I'll come to that later on. I mean, Ospreay probably didn't mind losing to Okada again, but like, despite the fact that the whole video package was just showing you the multiple times, there are multiple wins, and Ospreay got that big win at the G1. Like cleanly under 20 minutes, no interference and everything. So he has that one clean win, one dirty win, whereas Okada has like 7, now 8 clean wins over Ospreay. Just makes it feel a lot sadder. I think, no, the rumours about Okada changes depending on what day of the week and who you read online. Like some say, oh, it's a cert he's going to WWE, some say it's a cert he's going to AEW. And then there's the next day where it's like, nobody really knows where Okada's going. Well, clearly not.
I know where he's going. Straight into Stephen Wilson's draft team. That man has no principles. He fucking hates Okada and he drafted him. And I'm proud of that because I spited him to do it.
Yeah. I will admit, as much as I've talked about incompetence on the FDL part, it was a fuck off on my end that cost us getting Ospreay. Even then, Ospreay isn't probably going to show up to Revolution, but you just wait till all these bloody people like, I don't watch Japanese wrestling. You wait till next season when it's all about singles. They'll all be clamoring to get Ospreay on their bloody teams, I can just tell.
That's it. It's going to happen. Everyone's going to be like, oh my god, we should draft Ospreay. Hey, Maggie, we should draft Ospreay.
I know. Dave was going on an episode of Central, just how much of a banger he thought Elevator was because he had never properly listened to it. Like, yes, I remember me and Tom sitting there singing Elevated as he came out. Ross and Dave just sitting there fucking sitting on their horns, stone silent, so they were now daily. Well, what a belter of a song. Like, actually, I'll sing that when I go to Wembley next year. Well, remind me not to be sitting next to you then.
That's it. And, you know, just absolute terrible behaviour from him and your brother. Absolute shitebags.
I know. Tut tut. His buddy looking at Dave and Matt Smith's team. They could use an Ospreay still person on their team right about now. But again, like I said, this wasn't SDL. Talking about people in contracts, by the way, Trisha Dora failing to defeat Julia here. Now, I was convinced Trisha Dora was going to win here. I don't know much about her, but I do know that Julia, anything about her, like in the news, is basically saying that she's finishing up. Now, the recent news was she's told Stardom she's finishing up sometime in March. Stardom tried to get her to extend a little bit to Windy City Riot and finish up there, where I assume they'd have her drop the belt at Windy City Riot. And pretty much she's just told them, no, I said March, I'm finishing in March. Which is that a lot of people comparing her to Hulk Hogan for the last month and sending gifts of people saying, that doesn't work for me, brother, and said, Julia in a meeting with Stardom.
Yeah, it's definitely it's one of those things like the Met in New Japan contract talk. It's that time of year. It's rife everywhere. Some of it's came true. Some of it is still up in the air. God knows what's going to happen next.
Yeah, God knows that. Matt Riddle, he's technically a free agent, but he got Jeff Cobb to be his partner, reuniting their old PWG tag team against TMDK. And the best thing about it is, with most Zack Sabre Jr. matches, is Zack Sabre Jr.'s backstage comments, where he's going on about bloody Matthew Riddle teaming up with Jeff Cobb, the United Empire, and their bloody imperialistic imagery, and just taking the piss out of them for were comparing themselves to an empire, and you know the connotations that come with that, and just going on like, "Ah, Riddle, he doesn't even wear shoes."
Oh, that was absolutely outstanding. I was not disappointed by Zach in the slightest there.
I was very disappointed in them even implying that Matt Riddle would be joining the bloody United Empire. I'm like, no, stay away.
That's it. It's like, absolutely not. It's like the fact that New Japan even fucking brought him in the first place, I was like, oh, come on, lads.
I know.
Why?
I know. The fact that he's able to even enter Japan is still amazing to me. But we move back overseas, back over to Japan, where we had the New Beginning and the real kickoff to the whole tour. And I just read it here in the notes, GOD have a warm-up match against Chase and Kenta. So they announced a match for Osaka, which is still happening, for the IWGP tag team titles. And they announced this match here for the strong tag titles on Nagoya. Now, I foolishly thought they had just moved the match to Nagoya and changed what title it was for. Nope. We're having it twice on the same tour. And the reason I call it a warm match is I've watched them and like, not a bad tag team match. I really got the feeling half for most of this that they were really just, they're holding back because like, we don't want to go too big. You know, they were holding something back for the IWGP match.
Yeah, it's like, nah, and you know, Kenta does absolutely fuck all of these days anyway, so you know, you can't have him like exerting it and blowing his load in the fucking first match.
Yeah. I was shocked to see he was still even Defy champion. He came out with that belt, you know, with his haircut. His main thing right now, his stuff with GOD is not even his main feed. His main feed is with anyone online who says his new haircut makes him look like Yoshihashi.
Threatening to sue anyone that says it, and I, for one, welcome this decision.
There's even a point where Yoshihashi was on Japanese commentary. He just points at him like, you. Fucking everyone's saying I look like you. I look nothing like you.
Oh, it's absolutely. I mean, why he thought about getting that haircut, I have no idea. Is this part of the long running story between Kenta and Yoshihashi? I, for one, hope that book is not just closed, but burned.
Yes. Because he seems to have that obsession with his bloody staff, which is pops up every so often. But I mean, I don't mind that he got a haircut, like, because before he started going out in this weird moppy like hair, and it was sweeping across his face, like, almost covering his eyes. Like, you're nearly 40, or in your early 40s now, Kenta. You can't have that weird emo way sweeping across your hair. Look, you're a grown man. Cut that damn hair. You're watching Kenta come down the ring like Mr. Burns. Like, Kenta, I thought I told you to trim those sideburns.
I did. I said trim them.
still look better than Yoshihashi.
Got anything better than that.
Just the way they book this match, like this feud, is confusing. Like adding the defend the two separate defenses but against the same team, because they already defended the strong belts at Battle in the Valley, like I said, in a match that was okay, but I don't think it was too great against the War Dogs. So this was their fifth defense, and now out of the strong belts, they're yet to actually defend the IWGP belts yet until this Sunday in Osaka. So like they've put it weirdly, so like they won fairly convincingly to GOD, and then the commentary be like, oh well, probably because Chase and Kenta, that was the first match 2-on-2 as a tag team. The team did multi-man matches, but never in that environment. So then they've gone on to win with some sort of combination of Edo or Ishimori as their third against them in 6 man, and they kept stealing the bloody tag belts off them as well, because Kenta just loves stealing things from people. And so basically a case of, now they're winning again, they're getting more practice in, which is basically like, we've got more practice in, so we're perfectly set up to lose to GOD again. So I couldn't have been happy with this just being a one and done type of feud personally.
This is the problem they make themselves by giving people both sets of tag titles. Just make there be one. There really is no reason to have the strong openweight tag team titles and the IWGP when you get rid of the strong show.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's just ridiculous. And it then means we're forced into these matches where it's like, oh, are they going to win one? Are they going to win both? Are they going to lose both? Like, what? And it's like a case of, if they lose one and win the other, what is the fucking point?
I know. Like, defend them at Battle in the Valley is one thing, because that's just the strong brand. So defend them there, yeah, fine. That's where all their defenses up until like the tail for tail thing. I would say that's where all their defenses had been. Now defending it in Japan. And I'm not even against them defending the belt separately, because Sigurd said he didn't mind defending them at the same time or separately. You know, just establish the rules of what you're doing with belts. Are you going to just unify them into one? Because I prefer that option. But like, I don't like the idea of you defend them twice in separate shows against the same team. You're going to do it separately defense wise. Do it against different teams.
That's it. And you've got the problem as well, is that you're going to potentially devalue the belts one way or another. It's like, oh, we can't beat you for the strong belts, but we can beat you for the IWGP or vice versa. You're cheapening the value of the other belts in the process, and it's not right.
Yeah, like they kind of did that in a way to the War Dogs last year, because you remember they had that 2-day Independence Day show. Like, Goglin and Kidd, they won the strong belts the Saturday. And yet, despite Bart and Bishamon through most of that match, came back to Sunday and somehow couldn't win the IWG belts as well. So, like you said, you're basically determined you're good enough for these belts, but not for these belts. Like you said, you're risky valuing one set over the other. But you want to talk about adding value to a belt. It's happened, Grant. I feel like, how have we not talked about this more than we have? And a very unique set of circumstances, unique sort of rules to get to this conclusion. But it's happened. No, forget your Rev Pro titles and all that. The first time in New Japan, singles gold is around the waist of our Lord and Saviour, the Great Okan. All hail.
All hail. And what a match it was in a 10-minute Ishimori ring fit match. Like, this was just fucking wild. Like, what even? What? Who came up with that stipulation?
I know, this was, like... I think Okan had some sort of real, like, mixing martial arts style rules or something like that that he wanted to do, and then Ishimori put this out. Basically, to show how much better his cardio was to the Great Okan. As you see Okan getting blown up, they had to have him restart. He didn't give him an extra 30 seconds because he didn't do all his burpees or whatever he had to do, because there's like 3-minute intervals. Like, after every 3 minutes, he had to stop 30 seconds of push ups, burpees, or whatever the next set of intense training is. And Okan is knackered, he's getting worn down and worn down by Ishimori during this match. It's like, last person in possession of the belt, they just threw this in, because Okan does his exercise, like, he hits the sheep killer onto Ishimori, and it just happens to be a fall while holding the belt, and the match ends and they declare, oh yeah, he's got a hold of the belt, so Okan wins. Like, oh, okay, I'm not against the result, because I wanted Okan to win the bloody four-way to begin with.
That's it. And now he is there to bring prestige to the King of Pro Wrestling 2024. And I will not accept him losing the belt to anyone other than perhaps Shingo throughout the year.
Oh yeah, I'd be well into that. I want to see who they potentially get him against, because they're not really set up any potential challenges, because he's been so wrapped up in this whole UE versus War Dogs thing that's going to culminate in the cage match in Osaka. So I'll be interested to see that. He already talked about he wants to defend it. You know, even the small shows, he wants to add value and prestige to it. You're like, forget about the silly way I want it. This is going to be a title you take seriously because I'm wearing it. You know, and you know, I felt like Okan was my spirit animal during this, because I used to do karate on a weekend when I was younger. And every so often on the Saturday classes, they do an hour of a regular class, and then they do an hour, this is optional to join, an hour of this like fitness class thing, of this fitness training things. It was like a wee circuit thing. You do 2 minutes or 5 minutes on each thing, and you go around and round, and like you do like hitting pads and then doing bits where you just like do a certain amount of push-ups, a certain amount of burpees or whatever is kind of exercise you'd be doing, or you'd be squatting, holding something. And I was always knackered at the end of it, and I'd always get paired with somebody who just blew through it easily. Like, so much so, the guy I was paired with one time, he was wearing a vest that added weight to him, and he was still doing better than me. And so I like to think that Ishimori is that guy, and I was a Great Okan. I just made him even more relatable. Like, he's a man of the people, he's a Great Okan. Like, I'm not fucked in anymore, these fucking push-ups.
So you're telling me that you yourself were on the way of the grandmaster of karate.
Karate.
Oh! Like danger!
The great master of the question mark. I was too on my way to being a master of karate. You know, this was, this lifted us up in a dizzying high, seeing the Kruger can lift a belt, and then we had to be crashing down on our low as Nagoya ended with, first off, a match going to a no contest because people just couldn't stop getting involved on both sides, and then turned into a lumberjack match between Evil and Tama Tonga for the NEVER title, and yeah, the inevitable result given that Tama kind of dropped the sponsor that he was leaving. So Evil ends up winning, but then has to leave the ring so that Tama can give a big farewell speech, even though he had a couple of road two shows still to do. But it was kind of a damp squad down the show, and like, well, guys, I'm sorry I'm leaving, and I'm sorry that I had to, and my last big match I had to lose to Evil, so I'm sorry you've all got to live with Evil being a champion again.
It's like, yep. What the fuck did we do to deserve this?
What did we do? I know, it's like, even after New Year's Dash when it happened, I'm like, oh god, it's happening, isn't it? Like, I was like, okay, the next person he fights at New Beginning for the belt is taking it off him, and like, oh, don't make it, you'd be Evil. Why? Why did I have to be him?
It's like, you absolute bastard, Gato.
Ah, I thought we were done with this. If you want to give him one of the NEVER belts, give him one of the six-man belts. No one cares about them, evidently. So we don't give him the singles belt. Ah, it just keeps getting worse with these. Yeah, like, first, oh, we stopped some of them for winning the junior belt. We stopped them for winning the KOPW belt. Now Evil's got the NEVER belt. Like, ah, it never stops. Like, like whack-a-mole when it comes to them and the titles. You knock one down, one pops right back up.
Except in this case, Ishimori is at least a tolerable thing, and then wham-bam, up comes the big bastard himself.
And talk about, like, tolerable, you had Kanemaru. There we go.
Mr. Evil himself, David Campbell's favourite inspiration with the darkness.
See, we've already mentioned him. And I love it. You know how you love mentioning me every episode 3? We knew you listened, David. Because how else would you know? But we talked about his search going for belts. They were less successful at the New Beginning on the 23rd because we had the main event of Desperado versus Kanemaru. That's what I was kind of looking forward to because, you know, former tag team champions for part of Suzuki-gun and everything. That show was meant to take on Master World, but Master World has suffered a leg injury, which means he'll be out for good few months, like they said, somewhere up to 6 months he might be out for. So that match was scrapped from the show, and they said, oh, that puts more doubt into the junior title match because that means that nobody's there to incapacitate show, which he hoped Wattle would do, which means that Joe's free to interfere in the title match, which he did do, but thankfully it wasn't your typical House of Torture match. I didn't think it was a lot more tolerable watching Desperado v Kanemaru, and again, reason prevailed and Kanemaru kicked onto the belt. Oh, sorry, Desperado kicked onto the belt.
Thank God he did. Like, this to me, this is Desperado's time. The time of Hiromu is over. The time for El Desperado is here, and I'm all for it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you do. Like, love that he's announced that he'll fight Sho and support, but he said, like, yeah, but you're not worthy of having a title shot, so it's not going to be for the title.
Like, absolutely not. Get it around you.
Fucking tries to steal the poor guy's mask and everything. It comes out for our House of Torture match, like multi-man tag match, wearing bloody Desperado's mask, which I like his new version of this mask, the black and red one, because you get to see his lovely flowing locks flowing at the top of it.
What a handsome bastard he is.
Yeah. Why would he ever cover up that face, and why would Doki try and cover up just how jacked he is? Like, what are these wrestlers hiding? Like, be free, be who you are.
I know, if we want anyone to cover themselves up, Evil, House of Torture, wear masks, go full Bat Gimp if you want.
Things were rearranged on this tour. It was meant to be in Sapporo, I think it was, the Orient or Osaka, I can't remember, one of the shows, but Okada and Ishii and Tanahashi defend the six-man belt against TMDK. That got moved to the Road 2 on the February 24th show. Because of Okada's contract status, he announced that he was leaving at the end of January upon the expiration of his contract. So they wanted to get this match done while Okada was still under contract. And they've announced some future matches and some updates to show that he'll be on even though he's not under contract, but we will talk about those later on. But Okada said, oh, we need to do this title match while he's still under contract. And they've sold this as always his last match in Corrigan Hall for New Japan, and last match is a contracted talent. but they still didn't have him lose the belt. Like, usually you think, oh, they're swapping it around so he can lose the belt while under contract so there's no shenanigans. But he still won.
That's it. Okada does not job on the way out. He probably can't even spell the word job.
Yeah, that doesn't work for me, brother. Hell, imagine. And you meet, they did do a good job, though, at one point, making you think, we did the O'Connor role very similar to how ZSJ does. Like, you made you think just for a second that Big Fujita could actually get a win over the Rainmaker, but it was not to be. So much so that he hit them with that Rainmaker so hard that everybody was shaking hands after the match, and he was just all laid there, like, what happened? Am I dead?
It was fucking sent to the Shadow Realm, like.
I know. Even my dog's not happy that Okada didn't fucking lose. He's raging. Like, he's like Stephen Wilson. He hates Okada. That's what he does. Oh, it was a touching moment kind of after the match. You know, I'm shaking hands with Zach and everybody. And, you know, kind of patting Fujita while he was there, you know, giving him his props. And then he tried to cut his promo, but immediately bursts into tears. And, like, even there's even clips of Ishii doing his backstage promo, you know, stone faced Ishii, even he can't hide his tears. Like, he's crying, he's standing there backstage, like, Arnie, like, I know now why you cry.
even Ishii has feelings.
Yeah, when even Ishii, even the hardest of us, can't get, ends up getting swept up in the emotion of it all, you know. Surprised not more people in the audience weren't crying, but, you know, it was also a hell of a move from New Japan, a hell of a show of confidence for them not to make this the main event, because they said, like, no, we scheduled Shota and Ryan to be the main event, it's going to still be the main event, because Okada may believe in these, maybe one of the two guys that is called upon to fill that slot, so, you know, to show their investment in him, and those two still got the main event over this.
And what a fun main event it was. I was not expecting too much from this, and I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, because, like, we had them on opposite ends of that, the six-man matches, and which may have set them up for the title. And I'm like, what are they trying to do, these two, when setting up their story? Because I just wasn't interested compared to how I feel about you, Murda, and Tsuji, and their little feud. But the Wrestle Kingdom match was kind of meh, in my opinion. And then this match here, like, the fact that the fans were still up for it, like, when Shota came out after that emotional roller coaster of, you know, saying goodbye to Okada, he's for the last, like, Conrad match, his last Corgan Hall match, I'm coming in, and then the fact that, you know, Ben does these introductions, takes the robe off, turns around, and immediately, but he sort of dives him with a drop kick, sending the boy, but he's kicking his soul out of his body, hitting that hard right into the corner. I openly guffawed when I saw he just jumps into frame and kicks him right in the face. Oh, it was brilliant. And then the fact that they got to wrestle for a good 20 minutes, they got to go through the crowd and everything without House of Torture getting involved, like, because, like, they're off in the higher decks doing table spots and everything. Like, House of Torture could have easily got involved, and probably nobody would have done anything about it, but they let them go through all of that stuff, and then they got involved. Even then, they had Desperado and Tama Togi quickly get involved, even having Tama, I think, turn the lights off. They said, ha, now you know how it feels.
It's like, get that right fucking Rinji, pal.
And what a hell of a tale. So I was worried it was going to go very wrong when they had that kind of concrete bit where near the stairway up in the upper decks of Corgan Hall, and Shota takes the table and spreads it across there. I'm like, is he going to go up the other end and try and dive on it? Jeff Hardy's tail at Rumble 2000. And then he just powerbombs Ren. And Ren just goes tumbling down the stairs.
It was an absolute beauty.
And of course, you know, referee being short, his daddy just let this all go, like, I know, say about him, son. He's been a wee dick. You do what you need to do. And then he drags him back to the ring. I think he gets put through a different table. So, thankfully, it wasn't your usual House of Torture match, which is probably why it was so enjoyable. And then Shota getting a much-deserved win. And after the match, you know, basically vowing to help lead New Japan going forward. And even Tama Tonga saying to him, like, I want you to be the person I go after, evil, get that never belt back.
And I am all for that, as long as evil drops that bloody belt.
Yeah. This is one of those cases where, like, I'm very happy for the never champion to lose his first defense, which is a running habit. It's happened so often to people, I would like to have long reigns. So can we please have it happen to evil? Please and thank you.
And the stipulation there being, no, Gato, that doesn't mean then give someone else in House of Torture a belt. No. No one in House of Torture should have belts. Fucking simple as that, son.
I know. What part of the scene, I understand it. Yeah. So, like, maybe they don't have to do the full-on career brawl, but if, like, Shota and Ren could have more matches like this going forward, then I'd be more on board for the story they're trying to tell between these two. But then we had a week later, in going on 4th and 5th of February, the February 4th show was basically the storyline through that show was the war between the War Dogs and the UE. We had several singles matches. We had Jeff Cobb being taken out of his match and then attacked at the start of the show during a signing right before the show went on air. Because by the War Dogs, they properly write him out because he has a real life like calf injury. So they've taken him out as a precaution ahead of the Steel Cage match. And so Gato Canfield in his match against Alex Coslin, we had Gabe Kidd versus Inari, and we had Callum Newman versus David Finlay leading into the tag team rematch between the Catch 2-2 and Maloney and Connors. So Gato Can, I thought, did really well in his match against Coslin. Coslin looked like an absolute beast as he already is, you know, showing he can grapple with the, you know, experienced amateur wrestler and Gato Can. But I like the fact that O'Can not only slammed him to his finish, you know, right when Coslin looked like he was going to get back up, and he just slammed him down and then rolled through and stacked him like, no, you're not getting up from this.
He's like, don't even fucking think about it, son. Stay doing.
So it's happy to see O'Can get the win, and then a very hard-hitting match, you know, much like you said, the Kingston match, you know, Hanari and Kidd was beating the shit out of each other, again going to a draw because they both couldn't get back up. And, you know, I like this match and the match with Kingston. I'm just hoping that Gato Kidd doesn't make this a running habit of his matches going to no contests.
That's it. They have to have a place in the story. These two ones did, but don't overdo that kind of... Yeah. It's like, yes, Gabriel, it's very good that you can knock out the other person. The problem is that you knock out yourself in the process.
Yeah. I did like the proper like back fist, the fucking headbutts. And the guys... It felt like a real fight between those two. And I think the part of the reason I also went to a draw was like after Newman predictably lost to Finlay, that meant it was all like in terms of the score for that night, it was tight. It was depending on the result of the tag team match because it was 1-1-1. And so whoever won this match in the main event would have the decided advantage going into the match next week. Newman gave a hell of a show in DCL, but you knew Finlay was going to win one because he's the leader of Bullet Club. He's got the new belt. And he's got a big match after the cage match with Nick Nemeth and Sapporo to look ahead to. And probably a big spot at the Windy City Riot show, you'd think. And my big surprise about Newman, as he said, he's announced recently, oh, I'm going to be a heavyweight going forward. And I'm like, really? Look at you, son. You're fucking skinny as anything. Like, still, you step, don't step in there with an EC or a single, they'll kill you.
There is actually more meat in a Whippet's hard on than what there is in Callum Newman.
Oh, it's never it's not a saying I've ever heard. I don't think that'll ever leave my head now. Thanks for that.
Like, Newman's a fantastic wrestler. He is. He's got a lot of Osprey in him because I know Osprey had a big part in his training back in England. But Newman does not convince. Newman's looks as convincing a heavyweight as Shingo looked convincing a junior heavyweight.
I agree with that one. So we had the tag team title match between Catch 2-2 and Driller Maloney. Also, the story going into it was what was the mindset of Francisco Aquia. You know, he's been very hesitant about this whole cage match. He doesn't want to, he doesn't really want to do it. Like, I just wanted to win back the belts. Is that not enough for you? Because TJP, you know, he says he's still a junior. He's going after heavyweights. He's called himself a heavyweight hunter. And I think they really are heavily pushing the idea that Ospreay may vaguely be part of United Empire after he's in AEW, but he's not the leader anymore. And they're very much emphasizing that it might be TJP that takes his place. Like, I thought, I had suspicions of it after Wrestle Kingdom and New Year's Dash, but they're really much, he's the one leading the team. He's the one leading the poses after matches on this Road 2 show. So I think it's because, like, in terms of years in the business after, not even after Ospreay, I think he's more experienced than Ospreay. So I think by experience, they're like, yeah, let's have TJ be the veteran leading this group.
And I, for one, I'm disappointed in this because they have a natural leader. He's right there, the great Oshagar himself.
Yeah, I would have thought it would be him or Jeff Cobb leading the group. You know, Cobb, because, you know, he's a Westerner, you know, a guy, you know, I think that was the whole thing of, you know, all these guys from different backgrounds, like different nationalities coming together. I would have thought Cobb would have been the leader, but we'll see how this goes. He actually did look like at various points they were going to retain the belt, and then bloody, they were going for the lean-in tower, and Francesco Chiara shits himself because he sees Maloney with that fork that he tried to use back at New Year's Test, and he had Vietnam-style flashbacks. He jumps off the apron, he looks scared. Which leads to the Wardogs getting the advantage, and the Wardogs get the advantage, and they end up regaining the tag team titles. To which you said when we were talking about it off air, what was the fucking point?
What was the fucking point? And I like the fact that Dan Maloney just decided to bring a fork into proceedings because it's a little bit rude to bring up London knife culture. So let's use a fork instead.
Because, you know, a spoon, you can't use a knife, that's too, oh no, you can't bring a spoon, that's not intimidating enough.
But a fork? Fork is just terrifying. A spork, now that would be the ultimate weapon.
So,
I feel like the janitor, knife
wrench. But then, I said to you when you said, what's the point? Well, the real point of them losing everything is so that TGV could come out wearing a spooky mask. That was the real point of the match at Wrestle Kingdom. So they could win the belts back, and now it's swinging back in the favour of the War Dogs, and it's further planned out into what Francesco Chiara's mindset is going to be and what's Catch 2 going to be like going into that big cage match. Because I think it was maybe Cobb, Ospreay, Inari, and these two, and now they're teasing that maybe O'Connor will take Cobb's place because depending on the injury. Even bloody, like, Hanari got removed from the next night's show, and then bloody Maloney was pulled from a recent show because apparently his arm, like, his tricep is fucked, and yet he still wrestled that match with a partly torn tricep.
See, Punk? Play that, Punk. Someone can fucking do it. How come you can't, little bitch?
Yeah. So, I don't know. If you've learned nothing from this show, you've learned that Dan Maloney is tougher than CM Punk. Pass it on.
A paper bag is tougher than CM Punk. Pass it on.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not against the quick title change. I mean, like, I know the belts used to get quite passed around quite a lot a few years ago, but the fact that it's part of a larger story, I don't mind it. And maybe Maloney and that can feud with some other teams after the cage match. You know, on the plus side, it did lead to the return of the nice white belts, you know, with the silver, which I thought, oh, it's nice that they brought them at the press conference, only to lose them immediately the next night. It's like, oh, there goes those belts, because you know Cactus 2 aren't going to keep them around.
At least, as you said, we got those nice white belts back. Those are pretty.
They are pretty. They're very pretty. Then the next night, we had the big main event. That was the main thing I watched, because there was already a lot to keep up with. We chose to do this little show. It's kind of a what's been happening in New Japan so far, you know, the first Nagoya show, the big things that they're putting on Road 2, because they're really stacking up the Road 2 shows, and then also Battle in the Valley. So at the end of February, we're going to be back with Osaka, the two nights in Sapporo, and hopefully some announcements regarding both Windy City Riot and the New Japan Cup, and even the anniversary show, because the anniversary show is on March 6th, and the New Japan Cup starts from the 7th of March. I believe up until the 21st, is when it might wrap up. So we'll see what happens there. They announce a bracket before then. But the big match at the end of the February 5th Road 2 show was the Faction Warfare Gauntlet match between Just Five Guys and LIJ, where it'd be a case of two guys start at 10-minute intervals. If you both men are still there, nobody's got a fall by the end of 10 minutes, both guys are out. And then, like, or if you get pinned in the 10 minutes, it's basically winner stays on, and we see how many until every member on one side is eliminated. But it started off with Naito and Sanada, and they went to a draw, obviously. Then we had poor Taka getting battered by Shingo. Then Shingo himself goes to a draw with Taichi. We had Doki getting the upset win. I don't know if you want to call it an upset, but he gets a the roll up on Bushi. He tries to do the same thing to Harambe, but he's done it after the time has expired. So it comes down to the two young guys. It comes down to Tsuji and Uemura, who've been really telling the story throughout the Road 2 shows. And, you know, I rolled the night before, by the way, where Tsuji got beaten by Uemura in the six-man tag because he caught a spear into an armbar, which caused Tsuji to immediately tap out.
Which was absolutely incredible. Like, the absolute flukiness of that was beautiful.
Chris Jarrett, I think, summed it up. He got schooled by Uemura. You know, came into that simple armbar and he tapped out, which meant Tsuji was coming for revenge by relentlessly blocking in that Boston Crab, which is a staple of the Young Lions. Tsuji just walked over the back of poor Uemura. And then finally, when it looked like he was going to have some energy left, he cut him right through with a spear. LIJ stands tall, going into the big multi 5-on-5 singles matches at the last night at Sapporo. And then, of all the things to suggest, Tsuji gets on and says, one of us must cut our luscious hair at the end of this match.
I like the fact that not only did they challenge him for the hair versus hair match, but he'd done the other thing, which I love happens within LIJ, where Tsuji looked over at Naito and went, oh, by the way, I want to fucking go at your title as well.
Aye. Yeah. Again, it shows a thing by within LIJ, like we are a faction, but we're not against, you know, in our faction matches, the guys try to step up, you know, and be on top. He's like, because he's like, one of these days, we and I need to fight for the IWGP title, but we need to get past each other. I need to beat you. Because going into wrestling, it was Uemura who had the point to prove, and now it's Tsuji who feels like he's slipping behind Uemura, and he's trying to reclaim, you know, some of his momentum back as well. So the hell of it, other than the world title, I think this is the match out of those five I'm definitely most looking forward to, because of the potential. We've already seen how much of a banger they can have at Wrestle Kingdom. Maybe they get a bit more time here. In fact, what it's going to lead to in the future. Be sad to see either of them cut their hair, but, you know, needs must.
That's it. I keep tossing and turning over which one, and I think my mind's made up that I would rather have Uemura take the haircut for now.
Yeah, I think they even said that Uemura had been growing his head out to kind of as a mocking way to look like Tsuji a little bit. Like, he's kind of a get in his head, and now Suji's been like, he keeps bloody coughing, he's wearing red, I like wearing red, he's growing his head out, my hair's meant to be long. Like, how dare you? How dare you?
How dare you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although, on the one hand, I don't think many of the other Road 2 shows will be televised between Osaka and Sapporo, which is good, because as much as I enjoyed this 5-on-5 match, for the most part, I'm like, I am done watching, after the game match, I'm done watching UE versus War Dogs, and I'm certainly done watching combinations of Just Five Guys fight LIJ, because we had it for like 2 months leading into Wrestle Kingdom, and we've had it on every show ever since. And so I'm like, all right, have these big UE try singles matches, I'm sure they'll be great, and now unless it's a tournament, can you all keep the fuck away from each other?
Just simmer, lads. Simmer.
It's too much. I can't watch anymore.
There's many other matches awaiting us.
Mm-hmm. There are many matches awaiting us coming, because there's a little changes to support and to Osaka, and I'll talk about those right now. We'll look ahead to what we've got coming up. So on Sunday, February 11th, we do have that 5-on-5 cage match in the main event. Currently, it's being billed with Cobb in there, so he. As for now, he's still billed to take there, so we'll see if that calf injury is anything serious. ZSJ and Brian Danielson will be in the semi main event. We had that championship match for the IWGP Tag Team Championships. We got another 5-on-5 with LIJ and Five Guys. But in between that and the tag team match, we have a newly added match of a singles match, special singles match, between Okada and Hiroshi Tanahashi. It's kind of a send-off one final time, being in Osaka, because that is the site in 2012, all those years ago, of when Okada did the upset and beat Tanahashi for the title when nobody expected it. So, kind of like, we've come full circle. Sunrise, sunset.
Let us see if the president will job for the outgoing Okada.
Well, two guys who don't haven't done a lot of jobs recently. One of you's got to lie down. We can't go to a draw. You're only the fourth match from the top. You can't be doing these fucking draws. It's a 30-minute time that they very could try and do a draw.
Jesus Christ, imagine like every other match would be like, right, you're getting your time cut. Why? Because the old bastards are going to have a wee draw in the middle of the card. What?
And they also have to use that he will make appearances well kind of at the support show. So there's every chance someone could challenge him after the match and do one last match on the 23rd, 24th, and maybe he'll put someone over on the way out. Who knows? But we should also say that because because some stuff got moved around, like they weren't at the six-man tag title match anymore, Mickey Nichols and Shane Hayes got nothing to do. So for the first four matches on English commentary, it's going to be a four-man booth of Walker Stewart, Chris Charlton, Mikey Nichols and Shane Haste for the first four matches, and then they have to leave because they have to be in Zach's corner for his match with Danielson. So that'll be a hell of an experience, like basically hearing what Shane Haste has to say.
Honestly, I think this is going to be absolute comedy gold. I think it could be the funniest thing since Juice Robinson used to do commentary.
And so we've got some matches confirmed for Sapporo, but apparently there's some man matches being talked about that haven't been added officially yet, but I'll talk about them now. We have Eldis Brad on show in a singles match, no title on the line. Show to him in a world challenge, Evil for the Never Open Weight title. Another bloody fun five with five guys in LIG, good lord help me. Tanahashi defending against Matt Riddle for the TV title. The main event, I assume, will be this match here with Finlay defending for the first time ever the Global Heavyweight title against Nick Nemeth. I think they'll announce me after they defeat Kent and Chase Owens, but ZOD has said they want to have one last match for Tama before he goes. The OG GOD against the new GOD. Or they haven't said the tag titles will be on the line, but either way, GOD v GOD is teased for this show. And supposedly, you know, it's not here on the website, Chris John did say that the IWGP Women's Championship would be on the line at this show, so just stay tuned for those two match announcements potentially coming.
That is just wild.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's like the first time we've seen that defended since I believe Lone Star show on a New Japan show. First time, I think, in Japan on a New Japan show since I think Mercedes Moné had that three-way at Sakura Genesis last year. So since then, it's either been on a strong show or it's been mainly Stardom exclusive.
Yeah, so it is going to be interesting seeing it being added to the card. I'm open for it. Like, I think it'll be class.
Yeah, I'd like to see more of that title. And then, of course, we got the five singles matches for the Just Five Guys LIG feud with the hair match now being official. Main thing other than that we have on the card is a tag team match between Gedo and David Finlay and Nick Nemeth and Ryusuke Taguchi. So regardless of what happens on the singles match, they'll have this tag match the next night. I'm sure they'll maybe add one or two other things, but for the most part, it's all LIG five guys on that final night in support of. So what are you most looking forward to across Osaka in those two nights? Is there anything that stands out to you most of all?
The cage match, for one. There's a weird match that seems to have appeared on both nights as well, a Frontier Zone of Tomoya and Toriano against mystery opponents.
Yeah, this is like that weird like pre-show thing they've been doing. Like they've been doing, like, yeah, I know, in combination of some Young Lions or some Legends fight people from outside of New Japan. There's been people from like other promotions just coming up to have weird pre-show matches. They do that every so often. I think Frontier is what they're calling it.
That has got my interest because other promotions, you just never know who's going to show up, and there is some class people like me and you were talking about the whole Noah situation the other day.
Mm-hmm.
There could be I think Nemeth and Finlay, I think there's going to be something special in there because this is obviously we're seeing Nemeth as Nick Nemeth. We're not seeing Dolph Ziggler. We're seeing him as himself. And I know he's been having a good tear in the indies lately. I think he had a match the other day with Matt Cardona. Honestly, I'm surprised that New Japan has never tried getting Matt Cardona in for something because I think that would be a class shout.
Yeah, he has been doing stuff in Japan. Like, he was a champion in TET earlier this year. He was like their universal champion, like their lower card their mid-card belt came in, like, it was mainly a foreigner's kind of belt, like Chris Brooks was the first champion of that, and then he dropped that the end of last year. Like DDT, that's the show where he came out with a replica of the women's tag belt after Chelsea Green and became a champion. Everyone went up in arms like, is that the actual belt? Did he come out with the actual belt? And no, of course he fucking didn't.
It was absolutely hilarious because everyone thought he did. It's like, what makes you think that he would seriously be allowed? I mean, his wife's job would be on the fucking line for that.
I know. Some people. Also, fucking Matt Cardona, you know, knowing whatever on the internet's talking about, he moans at Nick Nemeth, like, I'm a GCW regular. Who dare you come in and take my spot? Who do you think you are, The Rock?
I mean, I would not be surprised if The Rock tries getting involved in this promotion as well, and maybe like tries to take like Hiroshi Tanahashi's place or something like that.
Anything can happen there. Also, the cage match, like you said, is a big like Osaka on its own was already stacked with that and ZSJ v Danielson. Finally seeing, you know, getting to see Danielson at all in New Japan Ring is still a great thing. But the addition, even though we've seen it many times, the significance of it, the anniversary of their first match and the big upset, and the fact that, you know, unlike some other times in WWE when they say it's for the final time, this seems like it will actually be the final time between Tanahashi and Okada.
Yeah, I think, I mean, let's say ZSJ and Danielson, like, what can we expect? We know it's going to be over 5 stars. We know it's going to be fucking godly. Like, they could main event any fucking card anywhere. It would be a godsend to watch.
Oh, I mean, you talk about bloody stars, but the Ospreay, I don't know what they rated his match with Okada, but even though he's not been winning matches, it's just like, keeps saying he's on a bit of a losing streak. Like, he lost in the 3-way at Wrestle Kingdom. He lost to Okada. Then he lost to Alexander in their rematch in TNA. But that match ended up getting 5.5 stars. So TNA went from the last 5-star match was in 2005. And then since October, Impact/TNA has had 2 5-star matches, both of them featuring bloody Will Ospreay. Like, the guy is a 5-star fucking magnet at this stage.
As it, Ospreay could have a stray fart and it would probably get 5 stars from Meltzer at this rate.
I know.
And now it's all upon Tony's shoulders to actually continue using him the right fucking way. God help us all.
It's like 7th of March is I think that's the start of the New Japan Cup. I think that's also the date of Revolution. So as like Ospreay said, he'd be here on the road to Revolution, so you think he'd at least make some sort of appearance at the pay-per-view. Or maybe in the teaser, like, it'll be the last match of the thing, but the very first official contract to match of Will Ospreay. And they'll tease, like, just some big, like, showcase match for Ospreay that I'll be against. I don't know. So I think we'll be seeing him there very soon. And, yeah, with, like I said, with Wembley on the horizon, it's in Tony's best interest to be booking Ospreay in a prominent program leading into that event.
That's it. To me, Ospreay has to go into AEW hitting the ground running, and it has to be against someone big. I would be bold to say that his first feud, and that he should win the feud, is against Moxley.
Well, that is good, because they do have history in New Japan as well. So, that's great. Oh, talk about the bloody cage match. Bloody Finlay, after, I think it was after the junior tag title, when he went backstage, the Finlay's match comments, he basically made this, like, war game / lethal lockdown style rules, where basically it's going to start with him and Finlay. And then one member from each team enters, and he said he wants the War Dogs to have the advantage. You know, he's calling it War Dogs rules. Everything goes like, I'm stacking the deck against you, just like you try to stack the deck against me at Wrestle Kingdom with Moxley. So, you know, Ospreay was making his jokes in that deal with Moxley, and he's on alcoholic beers now. David Finlay doesn't fucking forget, and now he's trying to take out on Ospreay and all of the United Empire. And that's one of the matches, again, like, Ospreay's on his way out and everything. But you got to leave Aid Empire with an idea of like what they're going to do, like how strong are they going to be without Ospreay. But then also you're thinking, Finlay's got this title defense coming up, he's got this brand new belt, and he's trying to build up these younger guys in his group. So I legit do not know which way this bloody cage match is going to go.
That's it. It's because, yeah, Ospreay's on the way out, but it's not exactly a singles match where he would perhaps job on the way out, knowing that it's just him taking the loss. It is the entire faction. Also, Bullet Club has a title on their hands. To me, the ideal scenario is that Ospreay is, for all intents and purposes, taken out during the match, but instead of eating the pin, someone else gets Finlay, like Cobb. If Cobb or Hanari were to pin Finlay, you've got a continuing singles feud. But then at the same time, you don't want to keep the feud going for the two factions. You want to separate them as well. It's a very difficult situation to put themselves in.
Yeah, 100%. And especially, obviously, you got this, and then Finlay's got to then immediately transition into the thing with Nemeth, which has been taken away, and then everybody in the company is basically now going to look ahead to World Tag League. What does that look like? And who fights Naito? If it is Naito, I have a strong feeling it will be him. But if it is Naito that walks out in Sapporo, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see the usual junior heavyweight champion match that we usually see at the anniversary show. Because remember a few years ago, right before COVID, like when the first shows in 2020 get cancelled was the anniversary show. Naito was the double champion. Hiromu was junior champion. They were going to have a match for the actual title. And then they couldn't get that match. And then one of the things that Naito says he wants to do now that he's champion is get that match with Hiromu. So I wouldn't be surprised if they try and run that back at the anniversary show.
I would love for them to make the exception to the usual main title of his junior title. It's always been like the anniversary, we put the junior title against the heavyweight title, but it's always felt like a foregone conclusion. It's always going to be the heavyweight title that wins.
Mm-hmm.
So why not do something a bit different? Because I would honestly love the idea of Hiromu pulling off the upset victory over Naito and then be like, you know what? I've done this. Let's do it again, but with the title on the line.
Yeah. I definitely agree, especially if he beats him in a non-title match at the anniversary show and then he enters the New Japan Cup, and they keep the open weight format of it. And so like, fine, now I'm going to win the tournament and earn another match with you, this time for the title.
I'd be all for that. I think Sanada and Naito going at it again, to me it's too soon. Don't get me wrong, it will be a good match. I felt they had a great match at Wrestle Kingdom, but I think for now, like, Sanada should have cooled off from that title, and perhaps he should be in the line to be the one to eventually dethrone Finlay.
Mm. Yeah,
or even take the open title off, like take the open title off Evil.
It's like, buddy, Finlay's even going around still calling himself the real world champion with this belt. Because it's the whole time between global and heavyweight and world heavyweight. You know, one goes to fight the world, comes to fight the other one, whatever the bollocks they want to spin on that one. So, Sanada is the longest reigning version of the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion, going after the guy who calls himself the real world champion. Would be quite cool, especially if they come face to face again in the New Japan Cup. Because you remember, going into that, they were both starting out new factions last year, and it came down to the final of Finlay and Sanada. And then you just pick up which Sanada got the win in. So you'd run that back with Finlay wanting to get his win back over Sanada.
That's it. It would make complete sense.
So there's still a lot to come this month. And hopefully, like I said, by the time we come to you in the end of February, we will have some idea for the New Japan Cup. And something I'm very interested in with the New Japan Cup is how many people they're actually going to put in this thing, because it seems to be a ever-inflating number every fucking year.
I think it's getting out of hand, and I think they do need to cut it back down, get rid of the filler people, like get rid of people that are definitely not going to win it, bring it back down to a manageable number and focus on stories that you can tell from it.
And
like, we don't need like a 32 or a 64 man field. 16 people is perfect.
Yeah. And more importantly, if we're going to give people buys, make it make sense. Like if they're a champion, fair enough. Don't give people like Chase Owens a fucking buy like you did last year, or was it the year before? One of those two, but people getting buys for no fucking reason just gets my gears up.
Yeah, and that's why to me it's like, if you've got, the competition should not have any form of buys as far as I'm concerned. It doesn't matter if you're a title holder already. The cup should be fair game for everyone that's entering it. If you're a champion and you're meant to be that good, you shouldn't need a buy.
I agree. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of East Meets West. We'll be back in a couple of weeks to talk about Sapporo, Osaka. We've got three big names leaving us this month. We'll see how New Japan in the coming months can pick up the pieces afterwards and look ahead, like I said, to the New Japan Cup and who we think might win that tournament and what we think of the field there. There's also going to be some great matches to come to us in March with that tournament, as there always is. But to make sure you can keep up with, as always, you can keep up with Eat Sleep Super HBG on all good Android podcasts and sites, Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast from, get a like, rating, or review on your chosen platform. You have East Star Central, we could break down the news, which Ross has had a bigger challenge of doing in the last few weeks with everything going on with Vince McMahon and the Rumble and all sorts of stuff happening. We have Hadraff Live, where you can hear the incompetent team break down the very reasons of the next couple of weeks why me and Grant will be winning this season. And you have our East Star Features, so the February's feature show, which is coming up soon. If it's not out already, I can't remember when it's actually due to be out. But this month's feature show is about TNA. It's about the best and worst of TNA, hosted by myself, featuring Billy Strachan, Chris Murray, and David Campbell. And next month, I believe, will be me and the Kernhans in March, covering the career of Demolition. Will be the March feature show. And then we've got some Bloodline-related content coming to you in April. We have quizzes in a back catalog of February. Our January feature was all about Rey Mysterio, followed by a little quiz show around the Royal Rumble, which is the day of the Royal Rumble. So if you like a quiz, go back in the back catalog and check that out. Make sure you also follow us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Give us a like on all the follow and all your platforms. Join the community page. You can get on the Listeners League of the SSR Draft. Get your scores read out. Get involved. Answer questions that we post. Maybe get your answers read out on an episode of Central. But Grant, been a hell of a month to talk about, and it looks like the best is still to come.
Wait, you've missed one thing. You've missed a very important point in this show.
Oh, fuck yes. Oh, yes.
I would have fucking driven right through to you. I would have given you the dokey chokey for forgetting this.
Oh, yes. Talking about March and what's to come there. The biggest return of them all. I march for the New Japan Cup, and hopefully longer after that. Gino Gambino's back.
Fucking Gino's back. It's real. It's happening.
We prayed for this day. They said it would never come. No, we said we have to believe. We believe.
If you shout into the void long enough, things will happen. Sonata became a champion. And how many years did I shout about that? Fucking many of them. Believe, people. Believe. Believe.
He was reaching old man yells at cloud with that Sonata thing, but it eventually happened. And sometimes you speak things in the ether, you don't even mean for them to happen, like Isidore winning belts. And then it ends up happening. But the man who will be here, and now we know what needs to happen. Doki needs to go all the way in this tournament so Gino can proclaim and tell us why the Doki Shoki is the most deadly move in all of wrestling.
God, I hope for it. I pray.
Ah, I missed the big man. He's missed every day. I can't wait to see how he interacts with Walker Street. He goes like, hello guys, who the bloody hell are you? Where's Kevin?
Kevin's away. Oh, bloody hell.
Kevin, you've really let your beard grow out.
Oh my god, that'd be amazing.
If you take nothing away from the show, know that Gino Gambino's coming back to New Japan commentary, and it's a reason to get excited. We are. And until then, we say a good day and a good doki choki to you.
Doki choki.
There now follows an enthusiastic advertisement for Quiz Showdown.
Hello guys, welcome to Quiz Showdown. I'm Daniel Campbell, and in this show you're going to see the members of the Eat Sleep Suplex Retweet team go through a very strange quiz. We don't know what the heck's going on with it, but you're going to have to watch to find out. Go check out on the YouTube channel now.
That was an enthusiastic advert for Quiz Showdown.
Sports Social Podcast Network.